for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Justin Torres was raised in upstate New York. His white mother and Puerto Rican father were parents of three boys before they were 19. In a new novel, Torres draws on his own experiences to explore a close, complicated family and the struggle between brotherhood and becoming an individual. The title of his new book, which has already received great praise, is We the Animals. Justin Torres joins me in the studio. I look forward to hearing your questions and comments. Call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Feel free to join us on Facebook or Twitter. Justin, it's good to have you here in the studio.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Reading this, I couldn't help but think that you either have the most creative, imaginative, almost wildly imaginative mind, or most of this has got to have come out of your own experience.
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote the book, I definitely kind of mined from my life. The hard facts mirror my own autobiography. I have two brothers. My mother worked in a brewery. My parents were not quite as young as you mentioned in your introduction, but they were teenagers when they started having children. And so in that way, the characters in this book mirror my family a great deal. But the incidents, I was making myth of family. And so I was inventing and imagining with all the incidents. And it's fiction. And these characters are different than my own family members.
You titled the book, We the Animals. There are three figures. Are you just talking about the three brothers, or are you talking about the whole family as you title your book?
Yeah, I'm definitely talking about the whole family. They're kind of an intense pack. I think that when I went with animals because I wanted to kind of like telegraph to the reader or send a signal to the reader, like this is a wild family.
It's a wild family. It's a wild description of life within a family where the three brothers realize that their parents are totally passionate about each other, and that passion can take very dangerous turns. Would you read for us from that very first chapter? It's titled, We Wanted More.
Yeah, I'd love to. We wanted more. We knocked the butt ends of our forks against the table, tapped our spoons against our empty bowls. We were hungry. We wanted more volume, more riots. We turned up the knob on the TV until our ears ached with the shouts of angry men. We wanted more music on the radio. We wanted beats. We wanted rock. We wanted muscles on our skinny arms. We had bird bones, hollow and light, and we wanted more density, more weight. We were six snatching hands, six stomping feet. We were brothers, boys, three little kings locked in a feud for more. When it was cold, we fought over blankets until the cloth tore down the middle. When it was really cold, when our breath came out in frosty clouds, Manny crawled into bed with Joel and me. Body heat, he said. Body heat, we agreed. We wanted more flesh, more blood, more warmth. When we fought with boots and garage tools, snapping pliers. We grabbed at whatever was nearest and we hurled it through the air. We wanted more broken dishes, more shattered glass. We wanted more crashes. And when our pops came home, we got spankings. Our little round butt cheeks were tore up, red, raw, leather whipped. We knew that there was something on the other side of pain, on the other side of the sting. Prickly heat radiated upward from our thighs and backsides. Fire consumed our brains, but we knew that there was something more, some place our pops was taking us with all this. We knew because he was meticulous, because he was precise, because he took his time. He was awakening us. He was leading us somewhere beyond burning and ripping, and you couldn't get there in a hurry. And when our father was gone, we wanted to be fathers. We hunted animals. We drudged through the muck of the creek, chasing down bullfrogs and water snakes. We plucked the baby robins from their nest. We liked to feel the beat of tiny hearts, the struggle of tiny wings. We brought their tiny animal faces close to ours. "Who's your daddy?" we said. Then we laughed and tossed them in a shoebox. Always more, always hungrily scratching for more. But there were times, quiet moments, when our mother was sleeping, when she hadn't slept in 2 days, and any noise, any stair creak, any shut door, any stifled laugh, any voice at all might wake her. Those still, crystal mornings when we wanted to protect her, this confused goose of a woman, this stumbler, this gusher, with her backaches and headaches and her tired, tired ways, this uprooted Brooklyn creature, this tough talker, always with tears when she told us she loved us, her mixed-up love, her needy love, her warmth. Those mornings when sunlight found the cracks in our blinds and laid itself down in crisp strips on our carpet, those quiet mornings when we'd fix ourselves oatmeal and sprawl onto our stomachs with crayons and paper, with glass marbles that we were careful not to rattle, when our mother was sleeping, when the air did not smell like sweat or breath or mold, when the air was still and light, those mornings when silence was our secret game and our gift and our sole accomplishment, we wanted less. Less weight, less work, less noise, less father, less muscles and skin and hair. We wanted nothing. Just this. Just this.
Justin Torres reading from the first chapter of his new book. It's titled We the Animals. Justin, that chapter provides a perfect arc from the loud banging of the forks and the banging of the feet and the demanding and the noise and the more, 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 all the way down to nothing. It's a beautiful, beautiful chapter. Did you begin with that chapter?
Yeah, that chapter definitely came early on, for sure. I remember I had just started taking this writing class with this amazing teacher in New York, Jackson Taylor, and I was riding home from the train, and I was really like revved up to get writing, and I was on the subway platform, and I was writing this in my head, and I was just chanting it over and over to myself, and the repetition was there because I needed to remember kind of this list that I was making. And then when I got home, I just sat down and just wrote it. And I think it does kind of set up a dynamic that's throughout the book. And that is there's a lot of striving. There's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of running around, smashing things. But kind of in each chapter, there's a moment of like deep satisfaction or deep wonder or deep love and with this family. I mean, this is a flawed family, but there are moments when they just really appreciate what they have.
There is such extraordinary love of mother exhibited in this chapter. Is she truly white, and is your father truly Puerto Rican?
In my own parents,
yes.
My mother is Italian and Irish, and my father is Puerto Rican. My mother is wonderful and deeply supportive of the book. I think that it was a little bit scary for her when she found out first what I was working on. But she's really come around to realize that, you know, this is fiction and that, you know, there are liberties that you can take and that, you know, that there is a great distance between her as a person and the mother in this book. But she also said something the other day that really touched me. She said that she had reread the book and she said that it reminded her to kind of slow down and appreciate the moments of laughter. And even when she looks back on our own family and our own experiences, that to remember, you know, while she was so busy kind of putting food on the table, that we did have a lot of fun.
You know, it's interesting. We've gotten some criticism from using the terms white versus Puerto Rican, because as one individual, Barbara, emailed, she says Puerto Ricans consider themselves and are, in fact, white. How would you describe your mom and your dad?
You know, I think that that is true, that there's a rainbow in Puerto Rico, just like there's a rainbow here. My father, I don't think, considers himself white. My father grew up in Brooklyn, and he, you know, didn't have a lot of money growing up, and he's definitely talks about white people
as separate. White people.
But because, you know, he's had that American experience.
Interesting. Justin Torres, and the book is titled We the Animals. Short break and right back. Justin Torres is with me. His book, We the Animals, has been called brilliant, ferocious, by Michael Cunningham. And if you'd like to join us, we were having a discussion, Justin, during the break about the criticism that we've gotten regarding characterizing your mother as white and your father is Puerto Rican. And as I said earlier, some have said Puerto Ricans consider themselves and are, in fact, white. You are very light-skinned. What about your brothers?
I mean, I think that throughout my family, there is such a range of color. You know, I've got tons of cousins. I mean, it's a cultural distinction. That's the distinction that I'm making, is that these parents come from different cultures. And I don't think it's true that all Puerto Ricans consider themselves white at all. There was a lot of slaves that were brought to Puerto Rico. There's a lot of black Puerto Ricans who consider themselves black. And then there's mixed Puerto Ricans who consider themselves mixed. And I think when you get to New York and... it becomes a way to self-identify, and it's a shorthand, Puerto Rican, but sure, there's a lot of complexity behind that.
I read this book less as a novel than a series of chapters, a series of essays about how a family interacts. Happily at times, for example, in the chapter titled Heritage, when everyone is dancing, led by the father, to part of that first chapter you read, when these boys are being beaten. I mean, it's a total family dynamic.
Yeah, and I think that what you said about it not being a traditional novel structure, not having that traditional narrative arc, is very true. And I had kind of the entire genre of coming of age stories to work against. You know, I'd read a lot and I wasn't quite interested in just doing that again myself. So I thought a lot about how could I kind of fracture this? How could I break it up? And how could I, in that way, kind of mimic my own experience? Because I think I had moments of understanding. And I think that each of the chapters in this book are kind of like a surfacing, you know, this moment where you've kind of separate from the family, you separate from the pack, from the brothers, and you realize that you have a different sensibility and that you're an individual. But then the next moment you sink right back down into family, you submerge. And so I wanted to somehow capture that in the structure of the book.
You growing up as close to your brothers as the narrator is to Manny and Joel, his two brothers?
Yeah, I think that is something that is just straight up similar between the characters in this book. And yeah, my brothers and I were so tight, and we ran around and caused a lot of havoc, and it was joyous, and sometimes it was scary. And but as we moved into adolescence, I think that because we communicated non-verbally, as we just understood each other's intentions, you know, we could just play games for hours, and you know, there wasn't too much explanation of why our motivations. We just got each other. But in adolescence, we started to kind of pull away as it became clear that we were
different.
You know, different. Yeah. Yeah.
How?
Well, I mean, I was, as a, you know, queer child, it's like you don't conceive of yourself that way as a child, but you're very aware that there's a lot of machismo in my home, and that I just personally didn't respond to that, or you know, didn't kind of possess that. So that was something that, moving into adolescence, it's not that my brothers were intolerant. I mean, my brothers are wonderful, wonderful young men, but it was just a difference that I didn't know how to express or talk about.
What about your own situation through junior high school, how you felt about yourself?
Yeah, it got kind of progressively more difficult. I think that, you know, I had an amazing, amazing high school English teacher who kind of saw, you know, the spark of potential in me, and really, I mean, she was one of those teachers they make Hollywood movies about. You know, she really went the extra mile. When later on in life, when I was hospitalized, she came and brought me books, and you know, she was just above and beyond. Other than that, you know, and I had amazing friends, but other than that, I was in a really, you know, isolated small town in upstate New York, and this was, you know, over a decade ago. So it was difficult. It was difficult, yeah.
Why were you hospitalized?
It's similar to a development in the book, so I don't want to, like, you know, ruin. I don't want to be a spoiler. But it was a misunderstanding between myself and my parents, and I think that I'll leave it.
You professed yourself as being gay.
I did not. They found out. They found out for sure. And then I was kind of outed in that way. There was a time of a lot of upheaval. I was making a lot of bad choices and bad decisions.
Like what?
I was I was using drugs. I was, you know, kind of running away from home a lot. I was trying to understand myself. I think I was really angry, and, you know, resentful, and I don't know, isolated. But I think that, I think that my parents made the decision that they made, and it had, you know, it had intense consequences for me going forward.
To put you into a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
And how long were you there?
I was there about 3 months altogether. And then I got out. What happened was when I got in, everybody there was, you know, well, I was 18 when, I was 17, but they were like, I was your age when I first got committed. You know, and there's these professionals who are telling you that, you know, you are diagnosably crazy, and, you know, you start to doubt, you know, you're kind of
your own sanity.
Yeah, your own sanity, your own like integrity and worth as a person. So while I don't think that I was going to harm myself before I went in, after the first time that I got out, I was ready and hopeless. And then I did have a suicide attempt. I was in a coma for a while, just for like a couple of days. But then I had to go back, obviously. but then I turned 18, and I realized that they couldn't hold me, and I just had to prove that I wasn't a danger to myself or others. And I did that. And, you know, I've never had anything else like that happen again in my life. I just needed to, you know,
find a way to express yourself.
Find a way to express myself, find a community that was supportive. And I did. I made it to New York eventually. I mean, it took a while. I had the scholarship to NYU, and I ended up dropping out after a month because, you know.
Why?
Well, it's hard to have this really disruptive experience your senior year of high school and then get to somewhere like NYU. And everybody there was very privileged and wealthy. I mean, I met some amazing people, but we were coming from such different places. And
were there times, as these characters were in that first chapter, were there times when you were actually hungry?
No. For these kids, I think is... I mean, I think little boys are always hungry. and I think that, you know, they're theatric about this, you know, this endless hunger. It's a metaphor, you know. There's a line in the book where it says, you know, every night we died of hunger. And it's like, yeah, because they could never get enough. There's something essential that's being withheld, you know. And
what do you think that something is, was?
I mean, I think it's like time and energy and attention. I think that there's a lot of stress. These parents are very young. They've got their own intense dynamic that's causing a lot of friction. And they have to work hard to stay afloat. And so they are starved a little bit for attention and you know, and a certain kind of consistent parenting.
Your mother does currently continue to work?
Yes. My real life mother?
Yes.
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 Who's different from the mother in this book? Yes. She's great. She's a guidance counselor, which is a great, great job for her because she, you know, she gets to interact with, you know, teenagers in duress, you know, and she's expert.
But she did at one time work in a brewery.
She did work in a brewery, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And your dad, what is his profession?
Now my father is a New York State trooper. When I was a kid, he got that job when I was... I don't remember, maybe 9 or 10, something like that.
Are they still together?
No, they're not.
They're not.
No, my mother lives in San Francisco now, actually, which is where I am now, which is nice.
Are you close to her?
Yeah. You know, we had a very difficult period after kind of the mental hospital and, you know, kind of years of upheaval. I think that writing this book, I was kind of writing my way back to my family. Now we're very, very close. And
you and your mother?
Yeah.
What about your brothers?
Another one of my brothers actually lives in Oakland in the Bay Area. And my other brother lives here on the East Coast. He lives in New York. We are close in the sense that we are fiercely loyal to one another. I think about them a lot, and I'm sure that they think about me a lot. We don't talk too often.
Because?
You know, I think that we kind of went off into the world, and we all three of us struggled for a while, and we all had to find our way. You know, we're all doing better now, but we struggled, and we weren't able to support each other in that struggle. And that's the one thing that we've been really good at as kids, was protecting each other and supporting each other. And as kind of adults, I don't know, it's difficult when you have nothing that you can really offer. And I don't know, it's just sometimes I feel like we know each other too well to, it's intense, you know, it's just really intense to be around each other. Yeah.
Justin Torres, the book we're talking about is titled We the Animals, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We have a number of callers. We'll take a few now. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Let's go to Ramon in Syracuse, New York. You're on the air.
Justin.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, how you doing? You know who this is, right?
I do. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. This is my father's second wife's son.
Oh.
Yeah.
It kind of goes along with what's being said. I miss you a lot, Justin.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And, I haven't had a chance to read your book yet, but I'd really like to look at it. I'm sitting here at work, and I listen to NPR every day, and I hear Justin Torres, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is such a small world. So I just wanted to call and give my love and, you know, my thoughts to you. And, I feel, you know, from the bottom of my heart, everything that you have said and what you're going through, or what, you know, what you wrote in the book, and what you're talking about. I was there, so I feel you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thanks, Ramon. I really appreciate that, and I send you love, and I'll see you. I'm coming up to Syracuse to give a reading, so hopefully I'll see you then.
Okay. Well, yeah. get a hold of me on Facebook, Justin.
All right.
All right. All right. I'm glad you called, Ramon. That must be a very touching thing for you to hear from him.
Yes, it's really, really shocking.
Because
my father, you know, they divorced and now he's married to another woman. So I haven't heard from Ramon in a number of years. And I didn't have the best relationship with my father during the time that he was a father to Ramon. So, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of bewildering.
Did your two brothers have a hard time when it was learned, when they learned that you were gay?
You know, really what happened was that I, you know, was like kind of immediately institutionalized. So I wasn't there for their process of, you know, coming to terms with it or anything like that. I think that they probably knew. And
they thought you were different somehow.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, for sure. But both of them, one of my brothers is very religious, so I think he struggled more than the other, but both of them have both come up to me and expressly let me know that, you know, they accept me and, you know, that they'll always love me. And it, yeah.
And your father?
My father, I think, probably struggled as well. But similarly, he has, I remember one time he said to me, you know, even if you had purple hair, you'd still be my son. And I was like, oh, thanks, Dad. I think that that means you're okay with my sexuality. I think that that's where you're going with that. Yeah.
So you think and you hope and you write, and that's what's important. Justin Torres, the book is titled We the Animals. If you'd like to join us, 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by MetLife Foundation, committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at MetLife.org. By America's Natural Gas Alliance, whose members are participating in an online registry providing drilling information to the public, FracFocus.org. And by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, our food week continues with the story of bananas, why they often don't taste like they used to, and why their future is endangered. We'll hear from Dan Capel, author of Banana, The Fate of the Fruit That Changed the World. Also, New Yorker science writer Michael Spector on the possibility of creating hamburgers in test tubes. Join us.
For those of you who may have just joined us, Justin Torres is with me. He is the third son, that is, the youngest son of a woman who is part Irish and what was
Italian.
Italian, and whose father is Puerto Rican. A mixed marriage indeed. And some of the characters in your book are quite white. Others are darker. And I mean that both figuratively and literally. Talk about your father's anger and how it affected your family.
I think that the father in this book, like my own father, had an explosive temper. I think that in the book I ran with that and the way that it kind of, you know, terrorized these boys. He's, you know, the father in the book is a very passionate man, and sometimes lets those passions run away from him, for sure.
Passionate both sexually and in terms of his exhibition of brutality.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Pops is the character, and he's a very dominant dominant man and needs to kind of rule over this family and needs to feel like he's in control. I think because there's a lack of control, you know, otherwise.
Underneath.
Yeah.
Did your mother work nights as the mother in this book does?
Yes, she did. She my mother worked shift work at the brewery, so, you know, she worked
Gosh.
All. Yeah.
She must have been exhausted.
Yes, yes.
She had your oldest brother when she was 16?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she did.
Gosh.
Yeah.
And your father was about the same age?
He was a little bit older, I think. He's like a year or two older. Mm. These are things I should know more solidly. But yeah, they were both, she was in high school, and they met in high school. And
did they both drop out of high school?
They did. They both dropped out, and they went and got married. They had to go to Texas, I believe, because of her being so young. You know, they did everything they could. You know, she worked at a grocery store first, and you know, my father had a series of jobs. And I mean, it's amazing because in a certain sense, they're a success story. You know, they were married for 17 years, and we are all, you know, we have all of our limbs, and we're alive and functioning in the world. And they never, you know, they didn't have support, you know, financially from, you know, their families or anything like that. You know, they just did it on their own, so.
Did their families play any role?
Oh, sure, sure. It was complicated, I think, in the beginning for my parents to, you know, to have come from these different cultures and, you know, reconcile both families. But I think that, my grandparents on both sides are wonderful people.
I'm glad. Let's go to Marlboro, Maryland. Good morning, Olivia.
Hi. I was just calling in to say about the comment that you made earlier about when Diane asked you about, you know, the culture of your father and Puerto Ricans. I just wanted to really congratulate or just, you know, appreciate how the way you answered it, you didn't really focus on, you know, racism, and you really saw it as like a cultural thing. And like, I can see like the way you think, like I really appreciate how it's not really, you know, straightforward, you know, black and white. It's there's a culture behind it. It's not just race. And yeah.
Well, yeah, thank you. It's a complex thing to talk about, for sure. And, you know, yeah, well, I appreciate that. Thanks.
As you said, it's self-identification, mm-hmm. and how you choose to present yourself. Thanks for calling, Olivia. And to Kate in Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and I'd like to say thank you so much for this book that's been written. I'm definitely going to get it. And I just wanted to state that I'm one of five siblings. I'm right in the middle. I'm 60. And my little brother, Jack Reynolds, he was born in 1959, and he died at the age of 24 of Kaposi's.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry to hear that.
And he graduated North Hollywood High School, North Hollywood, California High School, at the age of 17. And by then, he had lived a pretty violent life. And so he was the last of the five siblings. My mom and dad were divorced, and there was no authority figure. So it usually happens in families where there's no control. The rest of the siblings turned on him. And
oh, wow.
So he was, however, he's the only one of five of us that graduated high school with honors. And then he moved out of the house because my older sibling was really cruel to him. And so she put upon him and she called him sissy, fat boy, and all kinds of terrible names and accused him of being gay, and she wasn't nice to him. But when he finally moved out and got his own place, he got a great job at a bank, and he sought love. Of course, it was love that he sought, and he tried several different men. And, of course, it was in 1986 when he died of Kaposi's, because he contracted it. During those years, nobody knew what AIDS was. We were just learning, so he died in 86.
Right.
Now, I want to tell you, I've been trying to find a reason or a way to write a book about him or write a story about my little brother, because he deserves it.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
I'm so sorry, Kate, about your brother, and I hope that you will find a way to write about him. I think it would be a way to honor his memory and to help you in your grieving for him. Thanks for calling. When you think about the fact that your parents' marriage ended after 17 years and you were hospitalized around the same time, do you think that the two things were in any way connected?
No, my parents had divorced before. That happened about, I think, 5 years before. So they came together. And, you know, they saw me as in crisis. So they came together and, you know, made this decision together.
I see. Yeah. And are they still communicating with each other?
I think that whenever there is an issue with any of the three of us, yeah, they talk. Otherwise, I don't think they talk very much at all. But,
yeah. All right. Let's go to Mason in Charlotte, North Carolina. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. I was just going to ask, I guess this is sort of a generic question, but what your inspirations were growing up, just what you read and everything, because I enjoy writing, and I hope to someday get something published.
How much do you write, Mason? That's always the first question.
I write every day.
Good.
I just keep notebooks and things, but
That's great. That's great.
I really like your style of writing, I guess. I haven't read your book, but from what you read, it sounds a lot like what I like. But what were your inspirations growing up?
Growing up, I read anything that I could get my hands on. I mean, I read the encyclopedia. I read, it wasn't the kind of house where, you know, there was like a ton of books or a lot of guidance and
what
should
be
read.
What kind of books were around? Were there books?
There were. My parents were kind of putting themselves back through school, you know, at night, kind of at the kitchen table or whenever they could find a moment. They did like kind of college by mail when I was a kid. So there were books coming in. I remember there was some like Shakespeare plays and stuff like that. The first book that really made me think about being a writer and inspired me and kind of saved me was Bastard Out of Carolina by Dorothy Allison, that I read when I was like a teenager. And it's another book that draws on her own autobiography, but is a work of fiction. And it was just candid and honest and just really, really lovely and beautiful.
Mason, an awful lot of people say, write what you know. And then there are others who say, go for it, whatever it is. So good luck to you. Let's go to Manny in Sunrise, Florida. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. I enjoy your show very
much. Thank you.
Yes, Justin, I'm curious why you called it We the Animals. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. First of all, I love the style. I don't know. It almost seems like a repetition, a beat. It has a beat to it.
Thank you.
And I want to get the book to read it a little, to see if I'm correct, or just the part that you spoke was almost like a Martin Luther King thing, that there's a rhythm to it.
Oh, that's a huge compliment.
And, and in a way, I don't know if this is an out-and-out autobiography or a novel.
Yeah.
And if it's not an autobiography, why not? I mean, your life seems to be interesting, and it's somehow, I'm Puerto Rican, and I understand, whereas you had it in one home, the idea of being bicultural, so to speak, and what choices you must make in being bicultural, because there's different elements you can pick from either culture. And I wanted to, I don't know the question of the title, and I don't know who you wrote it for.
Well, yeah, there's a lot there to answer. It's not autobiography, and I didn't want to write autobiography.
Because
I'm protective of my family. Two, because it was more interesting to me to like make myth out of this. It was just, I wanted the freedom that fiction allows. I wanted to like, you know, use the tools of fiction. And I think that you get caught up a lot in like a kind of like gotcha, you know, is this factual? Is this completely factual? Game that I was just wanted to avoid. I think that the family I invented is more interesting on the page than my own family would have been. And as far as the title goes, I definitely want the reader at the end to maybe challenge the title and say, you know, no, these people are so fully human. But at the same time, I wanted, you know, I wanted a kind of like a little incentive or enticement to the reader to figure out why they're being called animals.
Justin Torres, the book is titled We the Animals, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. It's interesting that the young narrator doesn't have a name.
Yeah.
How come?
I think that I really wanted to draw attention to the we and the I dynamic that happens throughout the book. So the majority of the book is written in a collective first person. We, you know, we wanted more. We. But there are these moments of I and individuation and, you know, this like separate identity. I wanted that to be the focus. I wanted to, you know, a kind of universal entry point for the reader so that they could feel, you know, part of the we and then part of the I. And I didn't want to get too specific by naming that narrator. And I also think that, you know, the town is not named either, you know. And again, it all goes back to, like, myth-making and making it kind of as universal as possible.
Do you think that every family has a certain amount of dysfunction to it?
You know, I really bristle at the word dysfunction. I think that it implies that families like have dysfunction, that there's like a normal family and that it's like, you know, kind of in the business of producing like normal people. And I think there is no norm. I think that, you know, each family finds its way. Families, you know, I don't know, dysfunction, it always kind of raises the hair on my neck. You know, I think that the characters in this book are flawed. I think that they fail in their roles often, and they succeed in other ways.
I love that in your acknowledgments, you say, my favorite hobby is finding teachers to admire. Tell us about Laura, and I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name.
Iodice. Yeah, she's the Iodice English teacher that I was talking about earlier, you know, kind of Hollywood heroic English teacher.
She really supported.
She really did. And to this day, we're in touch. She sent me an email this morning with a Anne Bradstreet poem about having her first book come out, and she is she and you know what she did for me was that she showed me that I could communicate with people kind of through words and based upon intellect, and that there are mentors who will take that so seriously that they'll go the extra mile for you.
Yeah. Justin Torres, the book We the Animals. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, Monique Nazareth, Sarah Ashworth, Lisa Dunn, and Nikki Jex. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. AC Valdez answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales.